It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. Property owners across Wisconsin are getting their property tax bills in the mailbox this month and noticing significant increases from many counties and school districts.
A new report by the Wisconsin Policy Forum looks more closely at these tax levies and the factors that are driving up the rates.
School districts of all sizes saw big levy increases. Percentage-wise, it was Beloit with the greatest increase at 190%. According to the Policy Forum's calculations, the Beloit School District's levy nearly tripled.
To look further into this data, we're joined by Tyler Burns, Senior Research Associate at the Wisconsin Policy Forum. Tyler, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
So a lot of people are opening up these bills and seeing a big jump in the bill, in their property taxes. What are some of the biggest factors driving that rise?
So, you know, talking about the policy factors, the mechanics that are driving that, decisions in the state budget that was passed this summer are really sort of allowing this increase to be so big. First off, there's a factor in the state budget, or the state law, called the per pupil revenue limit. And what that is a number that allows school districts to raise money from a combination of property taxes and general school aids. Governor Evers, 2 years ago, or in his previous budget, increased that number to $325 per student per year. And that is still on the books today. In the current budget, that number was left alone, and there was no increase in general school aids. And so what that means is that entire amount, that $325 per student, can be raised through a district's property taxes. And so that was sort of the number one cause. The next big cause is, you know, everyone's likely aware the number of referenda that were passed, both in fall of 24 and then spring of 25 were on the high end.
Yes.
24 was a record. Mm-hmm. And so that allows districts to not only levy that allowed amount, but go beyond that amount. And so, you know, you throw those two things in together, and that's how we're getting the record. And then one other sort of smaller factor, but is important, is the increased enrollment and payments to the state's voucher system. The interaction there is complicated, but they do, on balance, increase the property tax burden. And so all of these things together is what led to a record increase of this 7.8% statewide. If you only have one or two of them, you're not going to get to a record. Now, there's sort of the underlying question, which is, why are school districts feeling the need to increase revenue this much? Mm-hmm. You know, there's things like inflation, teacher salary, healthcare costs. They're not, you know, we hear about inflation. They're not immune from inflation. And so there's upward cost pressure that's sort of the underlying reason that the school boards and voters are choosing to allow these increases to happen.
Okay, so now that we've laid that out, from your calculations, are you seeing more of the financial burden for schools being shifted toward property taxpayers?
Yeah, so for this specific decision, this, you know, general revenue for schools, which is made up mostly of state aid and property taxes, by allowing a relatively large increase in what districts can raise per student and not including additional state aid for that purpose, state aid stays flat. You're shifting, you know, the proportion of how much of this general aid or general payments for schools is coming from the property tax holder or property taxpayers. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that's essentially, this decision is shifting that burden that way. Now, there were a couple other factors, most notably the increase in special education aid, that, you know, I think the hope was maybe that would have balanced things out a little bit. And so, you know, if you look at all school funding in total, it's not as big of a shift, but I think this specific decision is definitely pushing the burden in the direction of property taxes.
So I called out Beloit earlier. Why are we seeing such different levels of levy increases across districts?
So Beloit's a very good example of, I think, the complexity of how we fund schools in Wisconsin. You know, they have this combination of state aid and property taxes. And because of the complexity of the state aid formula, the amount of state aid that Beloit received went down dramatically. And so they were able to increase their levy by a corresponding amount. And so it essentially tripled, as we said. And so I guess the the long story short, the factor there is the unevenness of how aid is distributed, or maybe not unevenness, the complexity of the formula of how aid is distributed. And that leads to, you know, some districts seeing big increases, other districts seeing, you know, declines.
Tyler, before we let you go, what about property tax bills next year? What could this look like in the future?
So we do 2-year budgets. And so under current law, the per pupil property tax or per pupil revenue increase is still on the books. The flat state aid is still on the books. So that upward pressure is still going to be there. Cost pressures seem like they're still around. Maybe inflation is flagging, but it might, you know, it seems like it's still moving along. So it's likely the cost pressures were still there. The final question would be referenda. You know, this was a big year for property taxes. Are voters going to be willing to support them the same level next time around? Will school boards be willing to ask? That's an unknown. So the big pressure, though, will still be there, which is those state budget decisions.
Tyler, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on.
Tyler Burns, Senior Research Associate at the Wisconsin Policy Forum, breaking down new research on what's driving an increase in Wisconsin property taxes. Now we turn our attention to the political dynamics at play that are shaping these factors, driving up property taxes, how this issue might play out in the 2026 midterms. Anthony Chergosky is an Associate Professor of Political Science and Public Administration at UW-La Crosse. Anthony, welcome back to the show.
Good morning, Kate. Thanks for having me.
We saw Republican gubernatorial candidate, U.S. Representative Tom Tiffany, taking to social media this week. Among the politicians blaming high property tax bills and Governor Evers' partial veto that increased school funding for 400 years. Do you see this as an effective issue for Republicans to campaign on?
It could potentially, Kate, because if there's one word that captures the current political moment, that word is affordability. And the political parties right now are scrambling to make the best possible case to voters on that issue of affordability. And this political controversy surrounding property taxes has been a long time coming. And both parties feel like they have strong arguments to make to the voters, where Republicans can point to the so-called 400-year veto that Governor Evers put in place in 2020. Meanwhile, Democrats are pointing to the Republican legislature, keeping that per pupil support, that general school aid flat. So we're seeing a real mad scramble on both sides of the aisle to make the case on this issue of property taxes, but more generally to try to make their pitch to voters on that core issue of affordability.
On affordability, I mean, Democrats have made this argument before that Republicans are not funding schools and not funding local governments enough. Will this resonate with voters this time around in 2026?
What's going to be so interesting, Kate, is if this issue stands on its own as a signature issue in the campaign, whether that be property taxes or school funding, or if it gets swallowed up into that broader issue of affordability. I can tell you that both parties feel like they have strong talking points on this issue. None of this is a surprise when we look at the domino effect, the series of events that took place to get us to this point that Tyler unpacked, whether it was the budget signed in 2023, then the budget signed in 2025. So the parties have seen this coming for a long time. And of course, now it all fits within that context of the midterm elections, where not only is there a highly competitive race for governor, but these state legislative candidates are going to be making their case to voters on these issues of the property tax and school aid as well, because we know that both chambers of the state legislature are up for grabs when it comes to that fight for majority control.
Anthony, Wisconsin had a budget surplus this year. As you know, lawmakers chose to lower income taxes. Do you think that decision had some political motivation in it, in addition to the financial aspects?
That is such an interesting thing to consider, Kate, because just as the budget signed in July set the stage for these property tax hikes, that same budget also cut income taxes. So politically, it's going to be really interesting to see how much attention is paid to the sticker shock with these property tax letters coming versus the overall tax burden. And the overall tax burden in Wisconsin has not really been on an increase. If anything, it's been on a decrease when we look at the overall percentage of people's paycheck that they're paying in state and local taxes. And so how much are current members of the legislature going to make their case to the voters on, hey, I gave you these wonderful tax cuts, versus how much are they going to say, hey, these these property tax hikes are unsustainable. You know, the role that different taxes are going to play in this upcoming midterm election campaign is going to be super interesting to watch.
So I hear you say the word of the day is affordability here. I mean, do you anticipate these economic concerns like rising costs and property tax increases could rival other issues in the gubernatorial race?
In the gubernatorial race, there are going to be a number of key issues. There will be national political factors that affect the outcome of the race for governor in Wisconsin, the national brands of the political party. But candidate quality will also make a big difference, the strategies used by the candidates. And then those unique state level issues also play a strong role in gubernatorial elections. So there's going to be a lot that plays into determining the outcome of the race for governor. But I have no doubt that unique tax issues here in Wisconsin will play at least somewhat of a role.
It might be interesting, too, to figure out how do voters separate what they might blame on the White House versus what they might blame on the governor in the state of Wisconsin.
It's one of the most fascinating aspects of the American political system, that division of power between local, state, and national. And they are all interconnected. What each level does affects the other levels. And then voters have to sort out how they attribute blame and responsibility when there are these separations of power, but also this real interconnectedness among those different levels of government in the American political system.
Anthony, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Kate.
Anthony Chergosky is an associate professor of political science and public administration at UW-La Crosse. He was with us to discuss the politics of property taxes in Wisconsin. And earlier, we heard from Wisconsin Policy Forum senior research associate Tyler Burns about the forum's new report that shows a big increase in property tax bills across the state, fueled by school district levies.